keep on walking. I'm walking barefoot.
From sea to shining sea, throughout the solar system, and extending to interstellar regions beyond, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all over this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you so much for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. I know there are so many other things you could be doing, but you've chosen to be here, and I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. When we say you have a right to know, when I say that, you know, I say it every night so people think it becomes cliche. I don't, it isn't, and I certainly don't want it to be taken that way. Gaining knowledge is a long process, and especially in our genre, you know. It's a long, long process. It can take actually years to break through and start getting some answers. And over the years, we have broken through and gotten some answers to some of our questions. We're still looking. Now, back in 1994, Jose Escamilla was out in New Mexico and had his camera pointed skyward. He was attempting to capture a UFO on video, and what he captured on video was, I think, as stunning, perhaps even more stunning, and that was a whole new life form, completely unknown. Nobody knew anything about it, and we still don't know much about it, and we still have tons and tons of people that claim it doesn't exist. But he captured what he has called RODs. And I think you're familiar with those by now. Other people have also captured them with cameras now. But we first heard about RODs on planet Earth from Jose Escamilla. And he produced a film about it, a movie about it. And then the debunkers came out of the woodwork like mold out of a rotten plank. And, you know, they said, okay, look, it's a bat, or it's not rods, there's no such thing, it's a bat, or it's birds, or it's insects. And you know, these people make a career out of being stupid in public, but they did, and they still are. Some of them are still doing that. Jose, in a conversation with me a few days ago, said, guess what? We've got the proof. We now have the proof. And we're going to be talking about that and some other things here tonight. Very, very exciting development. I think you'll find it very, very exciting, and as I did. And I think, you know, it's kind of earth-shaking. If I were one of these debunkers, I would be feeling the earth move under my feet now. Because this is pretty substantial stuff here. Some people that accept the existence of RODs, of course, do question whether it's a life form or whether it's some kind of a robotic probe. We'll talk about that with Jose as well. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll be talking with Jose Escamilla, and we'll find out about the proof.
All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Pretty exciting stuff on tap for tonight, so I hope you have it all mapped out and planned out and you're ready to stay with us for the full 2 hours tonight. We're going to be talking with Jose Escamilla, who is with us online, and as I said, knowledge can take years to develop, and you know, some people have the patience to do it, and some people don't. Jose discovered, I think it's a life form, but some people think it may be some kind of robotic probe. I think it's a life form. But he discovered it, and he's the one that brought it to the world. And the world, in its magnificent and manifest ignorance and stupidity, generally scoffed it. But, you know, they did that too when people first started talking about atoms and molecules and subatomic particles and Higgs bosons. The pontiffs of PhDism scoff at that stuff until it's shoved down their throat and proven. And because of that, it can take a lot longer to get the knowledge because you're having to swim upstream in a torrent of sewage from these people. But Jose has just been absolutely resolute, steadfast. He keeps plugging away. He keeps doing what he does. And he's with us tonight to talk with us about the proof. Jose, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back, Kevin. And boy, you put it—you nailed the head on the hammer, man, with the hammer. Because this evidence that has surfaced, man, it took—I've been researching rods for 19 years since I discovered them, and we did a lot of tests early on to make sure we weren't filming insects and birds and this type of things. But you know, these skeptics and debunkers came out. And they started claiming that they were nothing but insects, misfilmed insects, and I'm hoaxing this, and created a lot of havoc, you know. But still, I had researchers out there and all over the world that were steadfast, filming for rods, checking things out. And we finally, in the last 2 weeks, have a gentleman out of New Orleans, Louisiana, that's been filming them using infrared and ultraviolet camera lenses on his cameras. And he found their signature, okay? It's like, you know, when you see things in the microscope, certain bacteria look a certain way, they have a certain pattern, mm-hmm. you know, of their existence, and chromosomes, all that kind of stuff. They each have their own pattern, their own key signature that differentiates them from other bacteria. And what he started doing is he was filming into the skies because he also found some other things that are hanging out in the skies that's incredible stuff. But he started catching rods. And so he was using infrared and ultraviolet cameras, which film things that are invisible to the naked eye. You don't see them in broad daylight, but with these cameras and these lenses, you're filming things that are in that light spectrum. So in doing so, he was able to capture insects, birds, hawks, you know, mm-hmm. dragonflies, using the infrared lens. The ultraviolet is a different thing. That one you can't see anything. It's pitch black. And only things that illuminate and create a heat signature appear. But with the infrared, you can fairly see basically anything, you know. But using that infrared lens and that camera, the key signature of each creature has a set pattern to it. Okay? They each have their own signature. Like birds, their wings will be black, but their torso will be white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you can see the wings flapping. I mean, it's really cool. Insects is basically the same way, except their torsos are black and the wings are white.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because they got translucence. All right? And then dragonflies, you can see the long helicopter-looking torso, and the wings are also white, but, you know, the torso is black. Rods are white. And in some cases, there's black rods, but mainly he's been filming white rods. And he just shows you, he just annihilates the insect theory, because you can tell the insects are far away from the camera. And they're in focus, because he's got it focused at infinity. So they're not close to the lens, as most debunkers claim that, oh, it's an insect passing close to the lens, it's causing this blurring effect. Not this time around, kids, okay? He's got insects at a short clip away from the cameras. He's got dragonflies. You can tell they're insects. They're dragonflies. There's birds. But then you have these things. You have rods high up in the clouds, far away. Nothing close to the lens, okay?
All right.
If it was close to the lens, you'd be able to differentiate what it is. Like an insect is an insect. A bird is a bird. A rod becomes a rod. And with these key signatures, he's been able to document these rods, and he's got incredible footage, Kevin. He's got squadrons of these things. They're flying about in swarms, almost like a swarm of bees, man. I mean, he's got hundreds of them just flying around, and you're going to see these in the new movie that I'm coming out with Roswell Rods, which I'm starting production in 2 weeks. And because the urgency of making that movie now has come about, I mean, with this evidence, we're going to visually prove, without a doubt, that these are not insects. That is totally eliminated. Birds is going to be eliminated. Dragonflies are eliminated. So what's left? It's an unknown entity of some kind, because it has its own pattern, has its own signature in the infrared. And unless you're a total dotard, a total idiot, you're going to argue the fact, because the evidence is going to be right there in plain sight, clean, focus, high definition. Without a doubt, you're going to tell the difference between an insect and a rod. And this is what I've been telling people for years. But, you know, we got these grunt brains that are out there, and, you know, the stupid ones that are just doing this. But they're going to run for the hills. And, you know, I did a promo on Roswell Rods. I haven't shown any footage. I'm not going to show anything until we premiere the movie on tblnfilms.com. But I'm not going to show any footage, man, because I want people to see it, okay? I want them to see it as it comes about. And I'm going to discount everything that's ever been done against the rods. Monster Quest did a big debunking job. I'm going to show you how they deliberately lied to the people, how they deliberately set me up for a fall, to make it look like I'm hoaxing, that I don't know what I'm doing, that I'm just misfilming insects. They're going to regret doing that, because they lied to the American and world public.
You know what, though? Honestly, I don't think a show like that is really going to... we're hearing me back. You must have your speakers on.
I know. But, you know, the thing is that they have to be taught a lesson. You don't lie.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think they're really... you could destroy their reputation. It wouldn't make any difference. They don't have one anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
But they caused me a lot of hassle. Man, I got death threats from people that saw the Monster Quest episode. You're just a fraud. You're hoaxing rods. You know, and, you know, I got death threats, man. I had gangbangers after me, you know, to kill me because I was hoaxing. I was lying. And I wasn't, man. I was telling the truth. And this Monster Quest show, everybody, for whatever reason, it's a history channel, so it must be true, you know, and they just totally screwed with people's minds. And they do that, and this has to be put out in the open, because this is the way they screw people's heads, man, is they present stuff on the networks, and people believe it. You know, people don't have any common sense anymore. They believe everything they see on television. And this, it's kind of hindered the rods, but it really hasn't, because I always knew the day would come where the evidence would come and speak for itself and makes itself known. And here we have it, Kevin. And, man, Roswell Rods is going to be awesome. I have so much incredible new evidence that's, like I say, it's without a doubt, it's going to be one of the best films of the year, man. I mean, and I'm not just bragging because I'm making the movie. It's because of the evidence.
Tell everybody about what you told me about the CBS film of the baseball game.
The Tiger Woods footage?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking baseball. Yeah, it's Tiger Woods footage, yeah.
Yeah. Tiger Woods has rods have an affinity towards Tiger Woods for whatever reason. And back in 2006 at one of the PGA tournaments, by the way, I found a company that has that tape. I have to raise, you know, some licensing monies, but they had the super slow motion swing of Tiger Woods that was seen by people all over the country. But only the rod men and the rodettes, the rod women that were in tune to the rods, saw the rod. Everyone else is just, watching golf. But here this rod flies through the scene in super slow motion. It's faster than anything in the scene. The ball, the golf club, and everything's in perfect focus. And I've been trying to get it from CBS for years, man. One time they said, well, you got to get a subpoena to get that footage from us, and it's going to cost you $45,000. And I go, come on, for a 5-10 second clip? I mean, are you kidding me? You know? But there was a kind person there at CBS that I contacted 2 weeks ago, and he says, you know, you're right. You would have to get a subpoena to get anything from the network, but there's this company over here in Burbank that has all the stuff that we show live and in pre-recorded and everything else, all the tournaments, all the everything that just goes through CBS. They have a record of it. They tape it. And those, you know, for a small fee, maybe $500 or $600, you can buy the DVD or the digital download, and it's the entire program, you know. So there may be other activity there, but they said, you know, for $500 or $600, they'll do the job, and then you will own that, and you'll be able to use it. So, and it's a documentary, so, you know, I have some certain leeways, but still, it's going to cost me $600, but that's better than $45,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, when you were telling me about it, you were telling me that they have the radar clock on how fast the club is moving and then how fast the ball is moving.
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about that.
With this super high-speed camera, it was the first time that they tested a high-definition digital video camera that shoots 5,000 or more frames per second. It can literally freeze a bullet. You know, it's that type of thing. But it was a high-end, high-definition camera. It's not these little short ones that have the little small frame. This is a big-time camera. Mm-hmm. And they were, it was broad daylight, and they, you know, a PGA golf tournament, and he takes the swing. So they clocked, because of the setup, it has its own, I guess it's like a radar or something. But they clocked his swing at 125 miles an hour. When he hits the ball takes off slowly at first at about 30 miles an hour. Then it reaches a speed of 85, 90 miles an hour, just when it's in the apogee, whatever. Mm-hmm. Boom! And that thing, but it was pristine, man. The ball is perfectly round. It's no motion blur or anything. It's pristine. And just as the ball is about midway from where he's at to the edge of the screen, a white rod flies right above his head. And it goes zip. I mean, it's pretty fast. In super slow motion. I was at a bar with all my fellow rod men and my chicks and everything else, and we were watching this tournament, and we all said at the same time, "Rod!" And it was a white rod, and they had the undulations on the side. Went through the scene. And for years, Kevin, I've been trying to get my hands on that footage, but it was impossible. $45,000, I could buy a small motorhome for that, you know, or make a movie, you know. Yeah. But now we've got it, and it's coming about. And there's other footage. I mean, you know, the advent of high definition cameras, these SLR cams, the Canon cameras, it has made it possible for people to go out and start shooting for rod activity and UFO activity using the high speed sequencing of these cameras. They can shoot up to 60 to 100 frames per second, which is not super fast, but it's fast enough to where you can slow the action down to our level and see things that are in the spectrum of the very fast, you know, the high-speed spectrums of existence. And so I'm really excited, and Roswell Rods is going to be, it's going to be a milestone because it's going to change the paradigm. It's the first time an unidentified flying object has been proven to exist. We don't know what they are, but we know they are there now. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be, it's going to change the way a lot of people think, because if I can show you and demonstrate to you, look, there's a creature possibility here. There's a possible creature, a living entity of some kind that's gone unnoticed for perhaps millions of years. If I can prove that just visually, imagine what we could do if we had UFO footage in these high echelon camcorders, you know. And so, I'm not saying too. One thing about the rods is I've never said it's an alien entity. So that takes it out of that paradigm shift. You know, this is a entity that could be a possible living organism that's existed among us and is still here. So until we catch a specimen, we won't know its makeup. But for all intents and purposes, man, Roswell Rods is going to change that. It's going to show and reveal something that is among us that we cannot explain. They exist in the realm of the very fast and also in the infrared and ultraviolet zones. And we also have evidence of them on Mars, on the Martian skyline. There's rods. There's also, oh man, I just got some footage from the moon of rod activity on the moon. It's amazing.
Well, you know what that means. The implications of that would be that, you know, wow, man, you've got your speakers up so loud, it's I'm hearing me back. I'm hearing an echo. Anyway, the implications of that would be one of these two things. One, there's a lot of oxygen on the moon and Mars. Or two, rods don't need oxygen. One or the other. Now, I'm of the opinion that there is a lot of oxygen on Mars. And NASA's own data shows if you burn the dirt, you get a real spike in oxygen. But there's a lot of oxygen on Mars, way more than they admit. Since there is liquid water, provably liquid water on Mars, that means there's a lot more oxygen than they're telling you. But I would think there would not be very much oxygen on the moon. So I think this would indicate that Raj, you know, it's a take it or leave it thing when it comes to oxygen. Rods can take it or leave it.
And another thing too, that Trevor James Constable made this comment to me once, and I think he published this in one of his books, but he mentioned that a lot of these invisible entities survive travel through the ether.
Uh-huh.
That's in the upper echelons of the upper atmosphere, the ether. Okay, now there's, I believe there's traces of ether in space, isn't there?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, hey, we have to take a break, Jose. We have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Jose Escamilla, the guy who discovered these, I'm going to say creature, the guy who discovered these creatures called rods that fly at super high speed, so fast the eye cannot see them, but high-speed cameras can catch them. And we've been talking about a lot of the activity over the years of the debunkers. And, you know, Jose says, you know what? We now have the proof that they're real, they exist. And he's turning that into a movie. And it's going to be on TBLN.com. Now, Jose, when you and I talked a few days ago, you told me that you were revamping or rebuilding that whole website. Is that up and ready, or are you still working on that?
Well, what I'm doing, Kevin, is I'm putting a membership section for members, and I'm going to be making available all of my movies, all of my archives, the Roswell Rods archives, UFO footage that I've never released to the public, all of the moon full-color photography. It's all going to be on at tblnfilms.com. And I'm going to launch the new section July 31st, which is going to be the night that I'm going to premiere UFOs from Outer Space, which is, I'm finishing that up in the next couple of weeks. And then I'm going to start on Roswell Rods. But July 31st, we're launching tblnfilms.com with this all-new membership drive. Mm-hmm. And I want to have as many members come in there, because all the proceeds are going to go towards making more movies. You know, it's been very difficult. You know the story, Kevin. It's very hard to get funding for these types of films. You know, number one, the studios aren't going to fund you, you know, unless you do it their way. The TV networks don't even touch me, man. They're, you know, they don't want to air the stuff I show. So I have to do these independently. And with the help of supporters and people that have over the years contributed, you know, they've bought movie credits, they've contributed donations and contributions and things, except that's kind of slowed down. That, you know, the crowdfunding trend is starting to go into a different direction.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to find ways as independent filmmakers how to create revenue streams where there are none. I mean, for a year and a half, I was in negotiations with Lionsgate Films. They were interested in possibly doing the Battle of Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and releasing all of my documentaries. But they purchased Summit Entertainment about a year ago, and they got rid of a lot of the people that worked there, executives and everything. They moved their offices to New York, and Curtis Hedges, who's the president of TBLN Films, my company, he's been in contact, you know, pursuing that deal, but they finally told him, no, you know, we're not going to do documentaries, especially these special interest things. We're not going to do that. We're focusing more on feature films and bigger names, you know, that kind of thing. In other words, Lionsgate is now going to become another Paramount Pictures. You know, before you know it, the doors will be closed for all independents, even though that was an independent filmmaker's haven. It's gotten big. I mean, you know, come on, they're making hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, mm-hmm. you know. So, we have to create our own ways of getting revenue in so that we'll have enough cash flow to where we can make these movies, because it ain't cheap, you know. I'm finishing up, in the next 2 weeks, I'll have UFOs from Outer Space, which is the third installment of the UFO, The Greatest Story Ever Denied trilogy. And I'm still needing to raise like $7,500 to pay for the music licensing, to hire a TV camera crew, to send them to Vancouver, because I want to interview Martin Stubbs.
Yeah.
You know, he's the mm-hmm. guy that brought to the world attention the NASA footage downlinks that otherwise the public would have never seen the light of day, because NASA started doing delayed broadcasts when UFOs started showing up. Well, it was Martin Stubbs that downloaded close to 5,000 hours and recorded the whole missions. And that's why we have, you know, the footage of the tether and those creatures swarming the tether, and mm-hmm. NASA footage of UFOs coming into Earth, coming out of Earth. I mean, if it wasn't for Martin Stubbs, we would not have any space footage of UFOs and creatures and things. And I want to have Martin in my UFOs from Outer Space show, because he's the one that broke ground. He's the one that broke the egg on the mysteries of NASA. You know, they're hiding stuff from us. But he was the one that cracked the egg and broke it loose, man. And so, you know, I want to send a crew to Vancouver. It's not going to be cheap. It's going to cost $2,000 or $3,000 to get over there and film him and archive a lot of his footage. And that's most of the budget, man. But, you know, at least I'll have Martin Stubbs in there. I'll have myself and my fellow rod men. You know, one's in Vegas. We can drive to Vegas and film him. And Jeff Ferris is here in town, the original guys that, you know, started researching rods. And then I'm going to have this one guy in New Orleans, Louisiana, who has done it. He's gathered the evidence that we've needed for so long. And his name is Sean Gautreaux. He's a Canadian, New Orleans guy, and he's going to be a very famous person because he's also discovered what possibly could be the Aurora, or a craft of that nature that's using an invisibility cloak, and they hover inside the clouds. You can see them. You can see, he's got footage of these Aurora-looking craft. They're like triangular, but, you know, they're more sleek. But you can see the phasing in and out of the invisibility that they, the factor of them. And you can see the sky, it fluctuates like gelatin.
Wow.
Okay? He calls it sky shifting. And at certain times and intervals when they power up, the sky literally shakes like jello. It's amazing. And the rods have an affinity towards these events that are going up there. Like I say, there's swarms of them coming towards these craft that are hiding within the clouds. And he did a whole focus thing. When he started shooting for rods at first, but then he started seeing these things with the infrared and the ultraviolet, and he did a whole study of radar, weather radar. So, you know, and checking out the patterns and everything else in the atmosphere, and he noticed that the patterns that he was seeing down below were not the same patterns that he was seeing on the radar imprints.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he found out that there's huge, gigantic craft that are there in the clouds, man. It's amazing. And he has the most incredible footage of rods. He's got some up close and personal rod footage in ultraviolet and in infrared that are just amazing. And I have to say it again, this film is going to be a groundbreaking, breaking the egg type of film that's just going to totally change the paradigm, man. It's going to bring people together, and they're going to freak out that there's something here that we haven't addressed.
I'm going to show our audience who are watching on our TV channel a picture right now. And also, if you'll turn your speakers down just a little bit, we're hearing me again.
Turn it down?
Yeah. What people are seeing right now is a still shot from a Fox News live shot. Okay, so originally this was Fox News Live, and it's a nighttime shot. They're using some type of night vision on their cameras. It's in Baghdad, and this is at the beginning of the invasion of Iraq. And so they've got their cameras pointed out over the city, and there is in that shot a huge rod that they captured. Have you ever seen that shot? Jose, have you ever seen that shot?
Many times, yeah.
Yeah. There's no way to really know what is the actual size of that thing, but it appears to be many feet long.
It's huge.
Yeah. Now look.
There's a temple behind it.
It's what?
There's a temple behind it, and if you look at the video footage, it comes from behind the temple, and it flies forward towards the camera.
Ah.
It's a faraway clip from the camera. Yeah.
So,
they didn't show that. See, they only showed the still frame, but they didn't show it coming from behind the. It's a mosque, I think.
You know,
the curved roof, ceiling.
Yeah, an amazing shot. Doesn't look like an insect that Fox caught here. Doesn't look like a bat. Doesn't look like a bird. You know what it is, folks? It's a rod. And now. Go ahead.
Here's the thing that I'm going to address in the in Roswell Rods. Insects that are filmed at the low shutter settings, like, you know, the debunkers, you know, they deliberately film at the low shutter setting in daylight and at night. They have a pattern. They have a distinct. And see, this is Sean Gautreaux, man, just tweaked my brain. And I go, of course, every living creature has its own heat signature. It has its own pattern of flight. It has its own designated pattern in life. You know, we are mm-hmm. we are all geometric design.
Right.
And even insects shot at the low shutter setting, moths and everything else, they have a key signature that exhibits that's a moth. I mean, I can tell. I can tell when an insect flies through a scene at a low shutter setting, but I can also tell when a rod flies through the scene because they have a separate, different pattern, a different signature.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to demonstrate this too. We're going to do a lot of in-depth analysis and presentation so that people can start seeing, okay, I get it now. Whereas before, they just saw the insect and they go, that's all rods are, because it mimics the shape, but there's a certain pattern that discloses, yes, that's an insect, but that over there is not an insect. And that's a
well, now that's look, there, since we don't know really what rods are, there is a possibility that that rods may be some form of an insect. You know, it's not a mammal, so it may be some type of an insect. Maybe something else entirely different, a whole different class of living thing that doesn't fit any of our other classifications. That's a possibility, but it could be an insect. And I just want to make it clear before we tie that up too tight that it may in fact eventually be determined that, well, it is a type of insect. But if that's the case, it is not a type of insect we have ever seen.
Exactly. It's a high velocity mm-hmm. type of insect that has the ability to traverse the oceans. It goes into the water and comes out of the water. So, and goes into space. I mean, we have footage of these things taken by the International Space Station in full color. Clarity is impeccable. Shuttle footage of infrared and ultraviolet of rods shooting into Earth, coming out of the Earth. They have the ability to traverse all these mediums, okay, all these different realms and realities. Also, another thing is there was a professor, John Wooden, out of Exeter University in London. He's the prime minister of entomology. He's the guy that all the insect study professors and master's degrees and all that. He's the president of insects. Okay, he's the guy that you go to.
All right,
and he has studied all sorts of species of insects and everything else, and he was wondering. He created a model of what he felt would be the prehistoric ancestor of today's insects. Remember, the Big Bang of evolution happened like 500 million years ago, and then 350 million years ago, insects just appeared. We don't know where they come from.
Uh-huh.
We don't know if a spaceship dropped a batch of insects here or larvae. We don't know if they crawled out of the water and then learned to fly. They just showed up 350 million years ago. Boom, there's billions of insects all over the world. And he said, I'm going to build a model of what I feel would be the prehistoric ancestor.
All right, we have to step away for a break. All right, so just hold that thought. I want to hear the rest of that when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll hear about this prehistoric model of, you know, insects. All right, don't go away.
cross. It might be the death of me. I might be crazy, 'cause at best it's just a maybe. I'm gonna do it anyway. Yeah, I'm gonna do it anyway. You'd think by now I learned my lesson, and I quit messing with it. Guess I just can't do nothing safe. Besides,
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jose Escamilla. And as we went away for break, Jose was just about to tell us about this scientist, this doctor, over in, I think he said the UK, who is like, you know, the world's authority on insects. And Jose, I think you were saying that what he was going to do is build a model of what he thought the prehistoric ancestor of all the insects would be, right?
Exactly. And you know, when I first read the article, I thought it was going to be a big giant dragonfly. But no, he commissioned some of the students or some of the professors there to make a model based on his drawings and charts. And they came up with about a 2 or 3 foot long torso. It didn't have a head or a tail, didn't have antennae either. Oh, no, I think it did. It did have antennae. But it had small little winglets situated along the entire torso. They were not big wings. They were tiny little winglets. And when you look at this thing, it looks like a rod. And he gets up on this ladder, and he tosses it, and this thing glides using that type of propulsion, which is like an undulatory sinusoidal wave type of thing. It breaks the air that way. And it would just amaze me that, and the name of the creature is Proto-Pterygoat. That's Proto-Pterygoate. For someone who wants to look it up on Google, Proto-Pterygoat. And it is what he feels it would be the prehistoric ancestor of today's insects. Of course, he says, there's no way this thing would survive and still exist, but who knows? You know, we do know that these things have a cycle inside the water, inside the oceans. And, you know, early on, we looked at creatures in marine creatures, you know, jellyfish, because he said maybe it's like a jellyfish type of creature, because I think I've seen things that have those kind of undulatory wave fins. There was a ghost knife fish that had the, you know, the fin and undulates, yeah. And there's a cuttlefish that has a fins that undulates on both sides of the torso, and they're super fast. They can do maneuvers under the ocean. So we started looking at, and when I say we, it's me and James Peters, we started looking at underwater entities and creatures, and we rented this film that was about this. It had a big giant jellyfish on the cover, and I said, "Oh, let's go check this out." And it's a National Geographic special, and they were filming this in Barbados. near the Caribbean and stuff. And there's this logger turtle that they follow in its migration, you know, from the beaches of Florida all the way down to our Barbados and everything else. And they have underwater footage of them following this turtle. And you can see rods entering the ocean. They hit the water. You can see them in the sky. They hit the water, and they leave bubble trails like somebody's shooting bullets into the ocean. And we saw that footage, and we go, holy moly, man, these things enter the water.
In the film that you're referring to, do they even talk about or address what that is, entering the water?
No. They totally went unnoticed. We mm-hmm. saw it because, you know, we're in tune with what's going on, and I didn't even catch it. It was James Peters. He says, hey, hold off on the video, man. And he said, if I think I saw what I just saw, he says, this is going to totally bring rods into a total new level. And sure enough, we rewound the tape, and there's this turtle from underneath the ocean.
Okay.
And you see these rods zipping in, man. They don't even slow down. They accelerate under the water. And now we have footage of them coming out of the ocean at 2 miles away. They leave a wake of, you know, they break the water as they come out. We have footage of them at high altitudes, 10 to 15,000 feet, interacting with parachutists. We have them in the Cave of the Swallows interacting with some of the base jumpers. And now we have them flying behind buildings. We have a shot of them in the Washington Monument during Obama's inaugural. There's a huge rod that flies on the other side of the Washington Monument, right over the people. Big rod, man. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of evidence that's compiled, and now, it's a lot of evidence that we've needed.
Talking about these big rods, but you also have filmed some that are just, you know, a couple of inches long, right?
I'd say the smallest one has been about 3 or 4 inches.
Yeah, and the longest one you filmed has been how large?
At least 100 or more feet in length.
Wow.
Here's another doozy. Well, I'm doing UFOs from outer space. I'm doing a whole segment on these big starships that are surrounding the sun. You've heard of those, right? The sunships.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Big giant things are bigger than Jupiter, you know? And guess what? There's rods there, but they're huge. The rod's almost about a quarter of the size of the sun, man. But it's a rod. It's got the undulations on the side. I found one. It was unbelievable. I go, holy moly, there's a rod here near the sun, shot by these cameras that are like millions of miles apart, but they're shooting the sun in stereo. And I'd like to see the secondary shot of the same thing to see what's, you know, what the rod looks like, man. But it's definitely a rod or a rod shape. I mean, you know, I can't tell you if it's a rod. It's just a rod shape, but it's huge.
So now we know they don't have to have oxygen, but they can tolerate oxygen. They can live in the atmosphere. They can live in the ocean. And they can apparently live and function and thrive in the deep cold of outer space. And they can get up close to the sun and handle the radiation and heat. You know what? I don't think a can of Raid is going to get rid of these guys.
No, and I'd hate to get one angry at me. Imagine?
Oh, that'd be tough.
These things, how do you fight something you can't see? You know?
Well, there was...
Exhibited any aggression towards humans. Mm-hmm. We have footage of base jumpers at the Cave of the Swallows, and there's this one guy jumping in, and this rod about 3 foot long goes right... No, actually, he's about 4 feet long, because he's actually almost the size of the base jumper himself. But it goes directly at him, and then zip, it just does a quick U-turn to avoid any physical contact. And so, got one of the most spectacular shots. It was shot by Fox Network. Was one of these base jumpers, and he's falling in at terminal velocity. You know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. It's the point where the human body reaches maximum velocity, mm-hmm. considering the weight factor. But there's a base jumper going straight down. The camera is on focus on him. He's clear. He's in focus. The background is a motion blur because in 5 seconds he just goes past the camera, but they follow him with the camera real fast. So he's falling at 90 miles. Let's say he's falling at 100 miles an hour. He's falling this way, and a rod comes in and flies underneath his stomach and then makes a U-turn and goes back where it came from, all within 3 or 4 seconds max. Okay? Now, the curious thing about that is that the guy's falling at 100 miles an hour straight down, so is the rod. Yet, the rod is fast enough that it's not only falling downward at 100 miles an hour, but it's also traveling underneath him, and he, you know, and you can see him curve, and it goes back where it came from. It's incredible footage. There's no creature, there's no insect in the world that could do that. Skeptics were saying, oh, it's just an insect caught in the hood of the lens of the camera. That's a lie, because it was filming, it was set on focus on the base jumper. Anything in front of the lens, and we're going to demonstrate this in Roswell Rods, anything close to the lens would be invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It would be like a translucent blob. So there's a lot of incredible new evidence that has surfaced, and I'm glad we're here and now, and the camera technology has advanced so far that we are now getting impeccable imagery of rods. And it's just an amazing event that's going to come down when I come out with Roswell Rods. It's going to change a lot of people's heads.
We just have about a minute and a half here till we go to break. Have you ever seen rods demonstrate or exhibit behavior that indicates intelligence?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. They travel in pairs sometimes. Sometimes they're playful with each other. I have a prime example that's going to be in the film of a white rod that comes here. And this is where I got the term skyfish, because it looks like a fish in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then a black rod goes right up to it, and the white one momentarily stops for an instant and lets the black one pass by, and then it continues playfully swimming through the air. Now, in slow motion, you know, slow down about 20% of the speed, it's still going pretty fast, but you can see this action. However, when in real time, the thing just goes like this. It was like a flash.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't distinguish it, until you did slow motion. Then you saw the traveling and the movement of these two rods. It's amazing. And they do exhibit some kind of intelligence.
All right. We're only about 30 seconds away from a break, so we'll hold up right there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back from this break, we are going to open the telephone lines so that you can participate in this conversation. You're hearing tonight really, really earth-shaking new information, knowledge. It's taken since 1994, but the proof is here now. And you'll have the opportunity to talk with Jose, ask your questions, make your comments on the other side of this break, all right? We shall return right after this.
We'll be right back.
back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. And my best hopes, dreams, energies, prayers, all directed towards that the idea that you never suffer that tragedy again. We're delighted you're here. We're talking with Jose Escamilla, the discoverer of rods, a life form. It appears to be a life form, but it is something, before he discovered it, totally, completely unknown to the human race. And, by the way, that happened in 1994. Now, there have been a lot of debunkers and a lot of nonsense since then. But, people, you know, throwing mud and claiming it ain't so, Joe. But it is so. And as he said, we now have the proof. And he's been talking about that proof this evening. We'd like for you to join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you what you think about rods. And in light of the new information that he's been telling us about, the proof, if you will, that they really are real, they do exist. As he says, don't know what they are, but they do exist, and he's got the proof now. And I'd like to hear from you what you think about rods and, what your speculations are. Now, sometimes people will call and say, well, I don't know, it's just a speculation. But you know what? Speculation and then investigation on that speculation, that's called science. So that's a good thing. All right. Let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Well, I don't have any volume at all from the caller. I do see that the caller is online. But caller, we're not getting any volume from you at all. I don't know why. Let's try that again. Well, all right, I'm going to put you back on hold. I see what the problem is. I don't know why I have the problem. Caller, here's the deal. Give me about 2 minutes, and then you call back, and I will try to have that phone thing working. It's only got power to half of it, and I don't know why. We'll try it. It's not going to work. Caller, you're going to have to just... You're just going to have to call me in a couple of minutes here, okay? And I'll try to get that going. All right, Jose, let me ask you, the floor is yours for a couple of minutes anyway here as I work on this, but you speculate. What do you think these things are?
Well, I've always maintained that it's a living entity of some kind. They do exhibit some kind of intelligence. They don't communicate to us, but they have some kind of affinity towards humans, and they avoid human contact. You know, I was walking, we had just had lunch, me and my partner Saskia, we're coming out of this restaurant in Santa Monica, and a rod flew right at us and flew right next to her. It was the first time she'd ever seen one with a naked eye. Freaked her out, but we both saw it at the same time, and it was about a 4-footer, and it was brown, and just zipped up, you know, right by us real fast. It seems like they want to make themselves known, and maybe that's the way you're communicating, for them to be seen, and for whatever reason. You know, I was going to mention earlier, early on, man, we were trying to find out if there was a connection between the oceans, jelly plankton, and biological entities that are inside the deep seas, you know, that kind of thing. So we went to marine biologists and marine zoologists to find out if they'd ever seen a specimen like this. They did say that there is a similarity in the makeup of these things. They look like a cuttlefish, but except these things are bigger and they're longer, you know, and they don't have any eyes or anything that's telltale, you know. So as far as they're concerned, and the people, especially here in the Museum of Natural History, they said, you know, for all we know, there's probably a unknown creature of this nature in some jar, some laboratory somewhere, some marine laboratory, classified as an unknown plankton, unknown jelly plankton. For all we know, you know, yeah, if that person in that lab sees the rods on TV, then they'll say, I've got that. You understand? I think that there is a possibility there are specimens out there. It's just that they've never been identified.
All right. Let's go to our telephone, and I should have it fixed now. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, was that incident internal or external?
No, it was here. I had moved that piece of equipment slightly, and what it did is it pulled the power cord partway out, so it was not making good contact. I had to plug it back in, that's all.
All right. Well, fascinating subject as always, Jose. Your work almost humiliates our narrow range of what's visible to us. You know, I feel like, you know the way the human eye works, we don't really see with the human eye. We see through the human eye. The eye picks up photons, and those photons travel along the optic nerve through the optic chiasm, and they get caught in the corpus callosum of the brain, which is where the pineal gland sits. The pineal gland receives the electronic stimulus generated by the photon stimulating the optic nerve, and it generates a 3D hologram of the world that we see. You know, that's how we have visual images. You know, we don't accurately see what's going on outside around us. We generate our own 3D hologram because that's how the pineal gland and our optic center works. And I just have a feeling that we're meant to have a much broader spectrum of the visible than we have. And, you know, it makes me a little bit angry at the people that are messing with our physiology through the fluoride in the water we drink and so on. And oh, by the way, Jose, you know, if you're angry at the History Channel because they pulled a nasty one on you, be mindful of the fact that the History Channel is jointly owned by Hearst Broadcasting and Walt Disney. So maybe if you had put Mickey Mouse on one of those rods, they might have taken you a little more seriously. But you know, unless you make it Disney oriented, you know, or something, they're a major mind control center anyway. So cut them a little bit of slack. They're doing the best they can.
Well, you know, I really. I have a lot to say about everything, man, and you know, I put it up front, man. I don't pull any punches. Kevin knows me. It's just that, you know, when you have to endure constant, steady accusations. I mean, they even started like at the above top secret forum. You know, I was in there talking about rods and stuff, and there was these people attacking my family name. They're calling me S Scam Ia, you know, and I go, hey, man, now you're attacking my family. They have nothing to do with any of my research. The name is Escamilla, not a scam. You know, they figured that out. And then I got angry with a couple of guys, and one of the guys was one of the moderators. He was actually posing as a different person. And they claimed that they banned me from ATS because I was hoaxing Ross, which is not true. The reason I got banned, supposedly, allegedly, is because I threatened somebody bodily harm, which I didn't even threaten the person, man. Have you heard of Roy D. Mercer? He's a disc jockey out of Tucson, Arizona. Out of Oklahoma, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they do prank phone calls. But you know, it was just a big mix-up. But you know, they kept harassing, and they've really impugned on my character, and you know, they've defamated my character. They've call me everything but a criminal, man. They're claiming that I've hoaxed rods, that the reason I'm banned from these forums is because I'm nothing but a phony criminal hoaxer and fraud and all that kind of stuff. You get tired of it after a while, you know, and I have a breaking point just like everyone else, but I'm going to get even. I'm not going to go over there and kick somebody's face in. You know, I'm going to get even where it hurts, and I'm going to show where they lied to people. You know, it's just, it has to change. These bullying tactics and the ridicule and all that stuff has to definitely go out the window anymore. You know, if you're going to be a bully and everything else, you might as well get your facts together and really approach it with an intelligent way, as opposed to being a troll, you know, an idiot out there that's just wasting people's time and space, you know. So I address things a little differently, and now I'm not a passive aggressive. I'll get right in your face, you know. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to attack them, you know. I'm just going to show how they've bent the truth a little bit. Whether it's Disney or not, I don't care, you know. Well, I'm just going to present the evidence that they denied.
Let me say
American
this
viewers
about,
and the people.
Let me say this, you know, about the trolls, as you say. Our genre is absolutely chock full of idiots and trolls. Now, we have some great people in this genre, but they are the ones who get attacked by the idiots and the trolls. And the idiots and the trolls, amazingly, become the cheerleaders for people who are provably, at least in my opinion, fraudulent. And they become cheerleaders for them, and then, you know, they attack people who are doing real research. And so, you know, I think it's a great thing that you're coming out with the film, and that this film is absolutely going to blow the socks off of these people.
Yep.
And well, actually, it'll blow the socks off of the general public. For these idiots and trolls, it's going to jerk their drawers down, and the whole world will see what they're made of.
Yeah. Well, it's I'm really happy with the new evidence that we have. Speaking of evidence, is our caller still on the line?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Check this out, man. I saw an IMAX feature that has a rod in 3D in it. It's called the Journey of Man. It hasn't been released in 3D, but I imagine it will be. And there's a scene in there where there's some statues and super slow movement, you know. It's the Cirque du Soleil feature. And this rod flies right through. It's about a 3-footer orange rod. And I'm going to get that footage for the film. I'm also getting footage from this feature here that was on IMAX. It's called Adrenaline Rush. And it's these base jumpers jumping off the fjords of Norway, which is like 4,800 feet above sea level. It's snow-capped mountains. They're jumping off. It's a helicopter shot. They're showing them jump off, and white rods are zipping right above them. They're about 6 or 8 feet long. And this is footage, man. This is proof in the pudding, man. IMAX. And so I'm just excited, guys. I'm really excited that this new evidence has popped up here, and it's going to blow people out.
So, well, I tell you what, Jose, if they're jumping off glaciers, I think it's a pretty safe thing to say that those are not insects.
No, not at 4,800 feet, no.
Yeah, so, and not,
oh, by
not,
the way,
not around
check this
glaciers.
Out.
It's too doggone cold for insects.
And check this out.
Jose, I'm glad you brought up the fact that you have been harassed the way you have, because, you know, the listeners here, you know, they need to know that this is a kind of business that, Walt Disney, they're great. They're family-oriented, right? Oh, no. You know, when you cross them, they'll show you their dark side, you know, and like I said, Disney, the Hearst Corporation, they own A&E Networks, which owns the History Channel.
Folks,
and
can you hear what's happening?
That stuff. They need to...
All right. Folks, can you hear what's happening to the audio? Go ahead, Jose.
Everybody was cutting out. So basically what I was going to lead to is that a lot of this evidence... that has been gathered by different researchers in rods, you know, that are interested in rods. There's some Canadians that have been filming rods in 32 degrees below weather, freezing weather of rods. And there's no, like he was saying, there's no insects at those altitudes in freezing areas. You know, here we have frozen areas in Canada, and they're filming rods zipping around doing the thing. So,
well, you have super freezing in space. And you
have
NASA
filming
them.
Very cold.
Yeah.
Very cold.
Steve, do you have another question or comment?
Well, just keep up the good work and keep producing this stuff. I'm squarely behind people like you and Kevin that are doing all the heavy lifting, you know, and building the case. As you strengthen the work that's out there, it's going to wean people away from the mainstream, I do believe. Eventually, it's going to wake people up, and they're going to turn on to the real stuff, the meat that's happening out there. And Jose, there's an old saying that the best revenge is success. And you keep doing what you're doing, buddy. Success is bound to come. And that's the best revenge there is.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I'll continue. I'm not going to give up.
And, Steve, thank you for the call. Yeah, as he started, look, it could be totally coincidental, but when he started talking about Disney, that's when all of the interference happened with our audio. And that was not something that was happening here.
Right.
Okay? I mean, that was something happening out there. All right, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And we would love to hear from you, your questions, your comments, and let us engage our minds in what you're thinking. All right, 623-444-5889. Also, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call us, or because international calling can be expensive from some places, we have an additional option for you. It is called the Flash Message. Go to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and then you can send us a flash message. We do have one from John in the United Kingdom, which we'll be getting to right after this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I'm trying to figure out how to put this.
Just put it, man.
Rods have been filmed in space and on Earth and on the Moon and possibly Mars and wherever. Now, We're so tied, a lot of us are tied up in the idea that man is the ultimate intelligence. These rods don't seem to be tied to a planet if they don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Could their native environment be space and they just drop down here to check us out once in a while?
Well, it could be, and you know, we don't know what level of intelligence they have. What do you say, Jose?
I was going to say they could be traversing through dimensions. You know, look, we're in the third, fourth dimension, what have you, and there are other parallel universes according to physicists and scientists of the new paradigm and quantum physics and all that. And I have footage that demonstrates white rods coming in and out, phasing in and out of the blue sky. They actually come in and they phase out. It's like they're entering a cloud, but it's blue sky. There's no clouds in the sky. So they're phasing in and out of reality. And maybe they've been visiting that way. You know, maybe they get here through wormholes or maybe through the oceans. There's pathways to other dimensions or other realities. I mean, we don't know. And here's another curious thing. When we were talking to museum people, it was one of the biologists said, you know, the pharmaceutical world would be at your feet if you could catch a specimen, because this thing's metabolic ratio, the metabolic rate, is so ultra, ultra incredible in advance that it could have the healing powers to heal every disease known to man. Just the metabolic rate that this thing exists in, just traveling so fast. It seems to be a nonstop traveling entity. I've never seen one stop and hover. You know, although there have been reports, eyewitness reports, of seeing them hovering and zipping off, but I've never seen that. So there's a lot of different things that could benefit mankind, you know, benefit people. Or maybe these things are just rounding up the troops and then they're going to attack. I don't know. I hate to say that. But,
attack,
you know,
of the rods.
You just don't know about the nature of these things, you know?
Yeah.
Reminds me of Jeff Woolwine.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brent, you got any more question or comment?
Jose just stepped on the other point I was going to make.
Uh-huh.
Their metabolism, if we think hummingbirds are fast, we can't even see these guys with a naked eye.
Yeah. All right, Brent, thanks for the call, man.
Thanks.
All right, we have a flash message from John in the UK. And he says, if this is happening in the upper atmosphere, perhaps photons are somehow related to this, and maybe CERN can turn up something. Well, from Jose, from what you were telling us, I understand that they are in the upper atmosphere, but they're also all the way down here where we are and in the ocean below.
They're in our homes.
Uh-huh.
And here's the thing about rods and any other thing, you know, any critter or UFO or what have you. Think simple. Okay, when you start looking at trying to analyze it and make it a big complicated scientific formula, you get lost in the flush, man. You get lost in the scheme of things. These things are so simple. They're very advanced as far as propulsion goes. You know, they don't fly, they swim through the air. I've never heard of anything that can swim through the air like these things. But they're a very simple form. It's a very simple entity or life form. It's just a stick, and it has this undulatory wave fin. And they move. I mean, these things truck down the skies. They treat the skies like water.
Yeah.
And MIT scientists developed a, what do they call it? Omnicopter or something of this nature. I've got it in one of my Rods films. I'm going to have it in Roswell Rods. But what it is, they developed a nanotechnology that has two sets of wings, and they flip opposite each other like this.
Uh-huh.
So when you look at the rod's propulsion, they're actually creating a sinusoidal wave, just like the rods do, but using two sets of wings along a torso.
Mm-hmm.
So the dynamics of that type of propulsion works, and they're shooting these things in Mars, in the atmosphere of Mars, where there's hardly any atmosphere, and these things fly around in Mars and they do reconnaissance. So somewhere down along the line, NASA...
Now, wait a minute. Hang on just a minute. You're saying that this nano machine developed by some scientists from MIT is being used on Mars?
Yeah. Been used since 2000. And I put this in one of my Rods film that I came out in 2001, and I landed footage of it, and there's a scientist, an MIT guy in a white lab jacket, and he's got this little nano thing, and then he turns it on with a remote control, and this thing's just flying around, it's just zipping around, and it looks like a rod, you know?
And these are being used on Mars.
Yeah.
They're flying in Martian atmosphere.
Yes, sir.
All right. I didn't know that. I know a lot about Mars, but I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
What does that prove to you right there, folks?
It shows that they do know what's going on.
And it shows that Mars' atmosphere is not as thin as they tell us it is, or that thing couldn't fly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. That would be our telephone number, and we'd love to hear from you, all right? We have a flash message from Ross in Scotland. Hi, Kevin and Jose. I wonder if the rods have something to do with the EMVs of which James Horak speaks. Or maybe they are some sort of life form similar to those large blobs seen as UFOs during the space tether experiment. Keep up the good work, Jose, and cheers. All right, we'll address that when we come back. We have to take a break. We will return right after this.
Fooled me at all, you only fooled yourself. money like you got it made. You never had one bit of fame. I still love you, but you treat me wrong. So I pick up my guitar. Vegas to play some cards. You lost my money, you lost my car. Had to foot your way back to LA. You only made it half of the way. I should feel sorry, but I really don't. You think I'll come get you, but this time I won't. I still love you, but you treat me wrong. So I pick up my
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Jose Escamilla, and we are talking about rods and the new evidence that has come out, which has caused Jose to say, that's it, the proof is in. We have the proof, they do exist. It's not insects, it's not birds, it's not bats, it is rods. And so it's pretty exciting news to be hearing. And Jose, the speculation here in this, or the points brought up here in this flash message from Ross. By the way, John from the UK, thanks for that flash message. And Ross, thanks for this one. We have another one from Bella in Australia. This is Ross from Scotland, and he says, he asks if it has anything to do with the EMVs of which James Horak speaks. I don't know. We'll ask James. But then he says, or maybe it's some sort of life form similar to those large blobs seen as UFOs during the space tether experiment. What do you think about that?
You know, that space tether is curious, too, because there are creatures up there, and these things seem to be alive. You know, they're called dropas because they have a hole in the center, a donut hole,
yeah,
and a notch in one part of the diameter of these bodies that these things possess. But they pulsate like they're a living organism of some kind.
Uh-huh.
And the tether incident in UFOs from Outer Space, which is a film I'm finishing up in the next 2 weeks, I have evidence in there that shows the possibility that those creatures with the donut hole mm-hmm. might have attacked the shuttle and caused the tether to break.
Oh.
I have footage, man. Wait till you guys see this. And there's a curious thing that's stated by ground control. Now, there was astronauts in the shuttle that were doing this test with the tether, which in essence, all it is a Tesla coil at the end of a 12-mile long, you know, tether wire. But it's a Tesla coil, and they lit it up, and that created havoc in the plasma area of the vacuum of space where these creatures reside in, including rods. And you can see plain as day. Well, you can see it if you're an editor, because these things zip by so fast. But you can see them attacking what appears to be the tether, uh-huh. And it breaks. And then the guy at ground control says, well, if they were going to break it, they broke it at the right place. In other words, he's acclimating, if they were going to break it, they broke it at the right place.
If they were going to break it. Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. It was just a strange comment, and I've got it right there. It's a live transmission. And right as he said that was when the tether broke. He says, well, if they were going to break it, they broke it at the right place, meaning it did not harm the astronauts.
Uh-huh.
Because that kind of accident could cause a lot of problems for the astronauts, you know? So I think this thing, you know, then you see the tether. It's like 12 miles long, and it's lit up like a Christmas tree. And it's far away. It's like 80 nautical miles away from the shuttle. And they're swarming this tether. They're going all over the place. Now, ground control can see them because they're getting the live feed from the shuttle. The astronauts can't see them with the naked eye because the cameras they're using are ultraviolet cameras. They mm-hmm. only film things in the ultraviolet spectrum, light spectrum. But they're captured with the ultraviolet and infrared lens. And the curious thing is, two ground controls. There's Pine Gap in Australia, and then there's JPL in Houston. And they're saying, well, what are those things? And the guy in Pine Gap says, oh, that's ice debris that follows us, okay? Well, what they don't tell the public is that ice emits cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ultraviolet and infrared only capture stuff that emits heat. There's a heat signature. And then also, they're miles away, and these things are flying behind the tether. Another thing, too, is they don't tell people that they're traveling. The whole scene that you're seeing looks like a still, like the camera's locked on this event, and mm-hmm. the tether's there, and these things are swarming. What they don't tell you is that the whole scene is traveling at 17,000, maybe 18,000 miles per hour around Earth.
Right.
So these things in the tether are hauling, man. They're traveling fast, and these things are able to do maneuvers. And
you know,
so it's an amazing thing. And on UFOs from Outer Space, the third part of the UFO, the Greatest Story of the United series, I'm going to demonstrate how this is incredible footage, you know, that it had not been for Martin Stubbs, we wouldn't have seen the light of day.
One of the things about that footage that I've always thought very, very, very interesting is that you watch one of these DROPAs, and we're getting that feedback again off of your speakers.
I turn it down.
Yeah. I can control it here. All right, so one of the things that I've always found very, very interesting, as people were talking about that calling them UFOs and so forth, and you know, these are huge motherships and so forth. I always thought, no, this is some kind of living creature, although it's miles and miles in diameter. It's some kind of a living creature. And here's one reason why. In that shot of the tether experiment, with all those things swarming it, you see one coming from your lower left corner, headed over, and a big one. And it's headed up at an angle to the right towards the upper right corner. And the notch at the back begins to disappear as a notch at the front begins to form. And it looks totally organic. It does not look mechanical. It looks organic. So I've always thought that's some kind of creature.
Well, not only that, UFO, The Greatest Story of the United, the first one, I did a whole, well, Kerry Martinet, who's co-producing this film with me, who has vanished, by the way, he's disappeared, Kerry has.
Yeah.
And he did he had this motion tracking software, and he locked in on each one of these orbs that were fleeting about and did a tracking tracer, trace the tracking of the movement of these. And these things are zipping in and out. You know, they're actually moving in different variations. So, you know, it's just an amazing thing. And you can see the tracers of them going in towards Earth, coming up. Some of them are going towards each other and they avoid collision. And at the same time, as I keep saying, they're traveling at 17, 18,000 miles an hour. And mm-hmm. yet they're still doing maneuvers. You can see them going downward, straight up. Ice particles do not do that. And there's going to be some giant ice particles, guy, you know, because they're like 80 miles away from the shuttle cameras. So, you know, it's just an amazing thing right before your very eyes. You're seeing living entities that exist in the upper atmosphere. And
well, that's above the upper atmosphere. That's actually above the upper atmosphere. That's in space.
Yeah, well, if you look up the word tether, okay, it means rounding up the animals. That's what that stands for. So they were rounding up the animals, man.
Well,
the little things, man, that, you know, the little special things that are involved in the whole NASA thing, you know, NASA's run by the Department of Defense, you know, warmongers. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do?
All right, let's get to our flash message from Bella in Australia. Bella, by the way, I never knew a Bella in Australia, though I've been to Australia. But I knew a Bella in East Timor, and when I saw this, I wondered if it was Bella from East Timor who has made it to Australia. Anyway, I don't know. because if folks, you don't know, East Timor, when you leave Australia headed north out of Darwin, it's the first island you get to out there. Tonight, she says, tonight's show is brilliant. Jose, have you given any thought to the lifespan of these rods? What is your speculation on that question?
Well, one of the things that I'm always asked, and we're going to address this again in the movie, is why don't we see any carcasses? And my answer to that is, well, you know, we know that there's trillions of insects. There's ants, there's bumblebees, there's flies, there's mosquitoes, there's tons and trillions of insects, yet we don't see stockpiles of carcasses, do we?
No.
I hardly ever see a dead bee or a dead anything. I mean, you know, you don't see stockpiles of dead insects. So, and these things, they could be made of gelatinous makeup. Maybe they're a gelatinous type of a creature, you know, that they're so super light. I don't know what their composure is, but maybe when they, if they hit the ground, they disintegrate. We do know that they have a life cycle in the oceans, or they seem to traverse the oceans. Maybe they, that's where they bear young and that's where they die. You know, I don't know. Till we catch one, we don't know their metabolism or anything of that nature.
Now, there was a few years back when you were on the show and we talked about rods back then. Of course, we didn't have all this new data. But back then, we talked about a story about a fisherman in, I think it was Japan, who had caught one of these things in his net. Do you remember anything about that?
I remember something of that nature, but I followed up on it, and it turned out to be nothing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there was also in the Philippines, they had captured something in a jar that they thought was a rod, but it turned out to be some kind of a, I don't know, some liquefying thing that some pranksters threw in these people, man. They thought they had caught a rod. So, you know, there's a, I still think that it's some marine biology lab or something. There's probably a specimen tagged as unknown jelly plankton, you know, possibly. But then again, there's another thing. There's always something that just comes up with the rods phenomenon that's just amazing. And I'm going to show this in Roswell Rods. There's footage of a Gulf Breeze where there's a round metallic orb, and it's hovering there, and it's looks like out of mercury. Buddy, quiet.
And, for our radio audience, that's Jose's early warning system back there. It's his dog going off.
Hold on a minute. Anyway, so what happens is, he's nuts. buddy, be quiet. I'm on a radio show. So there's this orb hovering against a clear blue sky, and the orb suddenly just zips away real fast. Now, it's made out of metallic composure, you know? And so it's a hovering, then it just takes off real fast, and it turns into like the Terminator liquid mercury. You know, you see the first frame, but then it turns into a dark rod with appendages on the side. So for all we know, we're shooting spheres that are traveling so fast, even at a high shutter setting, they blur. But then again, here's the other part, the Tiger Woods footage. That totally annihilates that theory, because everything is pristine. The ball is pristine, and the rod flies through. It's about an 8 or 10 inch long rod. So,
and is it a pristine shot of that rod?
Yeah, yeah, super slow motion.
Uh-huh.
There's no motion blur. So there might be two instances. We might be spheres that are seeing spheres or capturing spheres that are traveling so fast that they create a rod shape, much like moths do when you shoot them at low shutter setting, except this is high shutter setting footage. And maybe we're capturing spheres and rods that exist in the higher levels of the spectrum of the very fast,
mm-hmm.
you know, the realm of the very fast. So it's just an amazing phenomenon, man, and we're tagging it. They're it, man.
Martin,
we're putting it out, and this information is going to be incredible.
Martin over in Germany has sent us a flash message, and as soon as we come back from this break, we'll get to it. It's just one sentence, one question, and we'll be back right after this.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach now, ladies and gentlemen. That means we only have just a few minutes left. So if you're going to call and talk with Jose, now is the time. 623-444-5889 is the number. From Martin in Germany, just a question. It says, are rods seen worldwide? So what about that, Jose?
Absolutely, yes. We have footage from there in Germany, from Norway, from Scotland. Brian McPhee, he's been filming rods there since the 1994, 95. We've got rods from the UK, from London, from Liverpool, Edinburgh, even Stonehenge. We got footage of rods over Stonehenge. They're all over the place. They're all over the world. Uh-huh. We just never noticed them. It's like seeing a different kind of wasp for the first time. And recently, there has been a species of wasp that has been discovered that they had never seen before, right? Never known to exist. Then suddenly you see it, and you go, wow, that's new, you know? Same thing with rods. Rods have been here, I feel, for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of years. Here's a perfect example. I had just been on hard copy and sightings. This was back in 1994, and I was in Mesquite, Nevada, at the first UFO Congress. And I didn't get to see this guy's lecture, but I presented my stuff, the Midway sightings and the rod stuff. And then he presented his, he was an archaeologist and an anthropologist, and he was studying cave drawings. And he had this one cave drawing that he had on the slide. And he said, I just found out today what this is. You know, he says for 20 years he's been looking at this cave drawing. It's an Aboriginal cave drawing from about 15,000 years ago. I didn't get to see this, all right? There's just people that told me about it. And he said, I was always curious. And he said, he even made a model of the spears that were in the sky. There was these stick figures. And there were like antelope or whatever running, but there were these stick figures, and they were tossing these spears that had feathers along both sides of the torso of the spear. And he goes, wow, I wonder if that's aerodynamic, you know? Because Aborigines, you know, they're mystical tribal people, and, you know, so he made a spear with feathers along both sides, and he'd throw it, and it was not aerodynamic. It just fell, all right? So he said, and this is what he said to the audience, he says, until I saw Jose Escamilla's rods, I thought these were people throwing spears. He says, they're not throwing them, they're pointing at them. Okay? They're pointing at rods. And they were depicted with the, you know, the fins across the length of the torso. Now that was cave drawings from 15 or 20,000 years ago, Aboriginal cave art. And, I've been trying to find the guy's name because I wanted to get a photo of that slide for the Roswell Rods film, and I'm going to probably track him down eventually. But it's just things like that that just kind of confirmed. These things have been around for thousands of years, you know?
How were the Aboriginal people able to see them when we can't?
Well, we can. The thing is in those times, they were not mind-bent. They were not mind-controlled. They were not visually murdered, man. They had clean vision, you know? It was brand new times in those days. There were no presidents and no chaos and all that crap that we have right now floating our minds, blocking things out. They were nature. They were with nature. They could see things in those days that we can't see today, even though it's right there in front of your face.
I found when I was in East Timor that if you were going to take a long trek through the jungle, you really need to have one of the native people with you as your guide through there, even if you know exactly where you're going, because they see things you don't see.
Exactly.
Like snakes, that's one thing they see. That you don't even see it, and they just reach out with their machete and whack, and you see a snake head going away, you know. And you would have walked right up to it and been bitten.
Yeah. So I think they've been around for thousands, millions of years, you know, and they'll always be here. And for whatever they are doing it They're on their course. They're not interfered on by us. We go along our business. They do their thing, you know, whatever they're doing, but they are here.
Their
presence is all over the world.
You think the chemtrails may have something to do with trying to thin out rods?
And oh, yeah.
Do you think it's working?
Yeah, the Army even confessed. They were on, I think it was CNN or CBS News or something. They said, yeah, we're spraying barium oxide or aluminum barium or whatever it is, the chemicals that they're doing that are harmful to humans. He says, but we're spraying that in the upper atmosphere to kill bacteria that exist in the upper atmospheres. So now here's a new twist. So they're spraying poisonous gases into the atmosphere that affect human beings, but they're doing it to kill bacteria. That means there's living organisms up there.
Mm-hmm.
They just confessed. So I think that they're trying to kill it. Now, look, you know, there have been rainstorms of gelatin falling, like in New Jersey and Georgia and different states. There's
India.
Been a, you know, one morning there'll be gelatinous goo on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the carcasses of these creatures that are getting killed.
Well, maybe.
They're trying to get rid of them because they are pesky little creatures that they say. The astronauts, Gene Cernan said, hey, these pesky little creatures, you know, we have to airbrush them out, you know. So maybe that they're trying to get rid of them. It's just that they are there, and there is a life cycle in the upper atmospheres.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and maybe this is a possible clue. We're just about out of time, but maybe, just maybe, they accurately identified them as a bacteria. Maybe they are a huge form of bacteria.
Well, Trevor James Constable was the first person back while the Army was trying to figure out a way to hush the UFO thing. He was photographing giant amoeba-looking things using infrared film.
Yeah. I've had him on the show, by the way.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I love Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And he was pretty interesting. He said, when I contacted him, this was several years ago, and when I contacted him and said, man, I'd like to get you on talking about what you were filming in the skies. And he said, I can't believe that people are interested in that these days. I said, believe me, they are. And he said, well, that's very, very gratifying to me to know that, you know, after all this time, people are still interested in it.
Yeah.
But we're interested. We just don't find too many people who know what they're talking about. Jose, we're just about out of time. Give your web address again so people can get over there and join your members community whenever you open it up.
Yes, yes. We're going to launch on the July 31st, the premiere of UFOs from Outer Space. It's tblnfilms.com. That's four letters. T as in Tom, B as in Bob, L as in Larry, N as in Nancy, and then the word films, FILMS.com. That's tblnfilms.com. And there you're going to see all my films. You're going to see movie premieres. We're even going to have a live broadcast August 16th, a remote viewing of the moon in full color from the backyard telescope of Bill Bryson in Richmond, Texas. So we're going to have a live pay-per-view event where people can get see the moon in full color and all its splendor from right here on Earth, man. Stuff that NASA should have done years ago.
Okay. Jose, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this one in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, Jose Escamilla, earth-breaking, earth-shaking news tonight. And I so appreciate him doing this here at the Kevin Smith Show. Look, the proof is in now. And, you know, the debunkers, well, once again, shown to be the fools they are. There's a difference in being a debunker and being skeptical. A debunker is opposed regardless of the evidence. But being skeptical simply means, well, I want to see the evidence. Well, okay, you're going to get to do it. Jose's got the new film coming out, and it will have stuff you've never, ever seen before, as he described here tonight. Well, that's going to do it for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.